Hi, everyone, and welcome to DevRaga Personal Finance. My name's DevRaga, and this is part two of an interview with an insurance expert, Phil Thompson from Sky Wealth. Welcome again, Phil. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, in this part two, we're going to really go in depth into other types of personal insurance, such as life insurance, TPD, trauma. Often these get discussed, but probably not as in-depth as income protection, which we have discussed in part one. So, Phil, you ready to get started again?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's get started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
If you're new to the podcasting channel, remember the three main aims: education, empowerment, and entertainment. And if you want to reach Dev, best way is via Twitter or via Facebook. So, Phil, life insurance, right? Again,
a very entertaining subject.
That's
mind
right.
You.
Very morbid subject. And look, I'm a doctor. Pronounce people dead. Not uncommonly. It's not an uncommon thing, particularly if you work in geriatrics. If you work in a nursing home, it's almost on a daily basis. If you work in the emergency department and work in a big hospital, almost on a daily basis. Everything from cancer to road trauma to all these nasty, nasty things happen to people. So what is life insurance? Which really is death insurance, isn't it? Like, it's when you die, but it's interesting how they call life insurance. And when should people get it?
Yeah, life insurance or death insurance, but the term is interchangeable. But it's a lump sum payment if you pass away. And when people should get it, I mean, my view, if you have people relying on you financially, that's when it's a must have. So if you're, single, you're on your income, living with your parents, and no one's really relying on you financially, yes. Of course, people will be sad if you pass away, but there's no financial reliance. Well, maybe it's not needed then. Dual income, no kids, no mortgage, debt. Again, someone will be sad if you pass away, but there's no massive financial kind of interdependency. Then again, maybe not so important. But if anyone's relying on you financially to pay a mortgage, to have an income, to put food on the table, then if you pass away, everything stops from you, your contribution financially, and that's when life insurance is super important.
Yeah, look, it's really a morbid topic, but one of my close colleagues and friends, Dr. FT, if you're listening, and I know you listen, actually had a very near miss. He actually had a heart attack, and he had to be rushed to an angio suite and had to have a stent put in. And I remember him basically telling me after the procedure, when he was laying down flat, he was only 37 years old when this happened, laying down flat when the cardiologist was, ready to go, he basically was at peace because, an angiogram, as routine as it is, it's, people can have a cardiac arrest on the table. Things can go horribly wrong because he was having an act of what we call a ST elevation MI, which is a very serious condition. And one of the things he told me after the procedure was, Dev, I was so at peace because I had my life insurance sorted out. I had my personal insurances sorted out. He's got two very young kids at the time and a wife who happens to also be a doctor. And he was just completely relaxed about it all, not because he had complete confidence in the cardiologist, but because he knew if something were to go wrong, then his family are protected. So it's an incredibly important topic, as morbid as it is, that everyone needs to talk about it. Now, in the previous episode, you mentioned some of the 2020 changes and 2021 changes for income protection. Were there any changes that we need to be aware of for new policyholders or pre-existing policyholders?
Yeah, for life, TPD and trauma, there was no big changes. APRA didn't come in and make any adjustments for that, other than I did talk about in the last episode about protecting your super changes. So that did impact any policyholders who have money or who have a policy inside of their super and they stopped contributing to their super fund. So parental leave, if you go and work abroad, you'll stop paying money into your super fund. The super fund legally has to stop your insurance policy. Because you're not the owner of that policy, they are. It's a part of the legislation that they have to stop your policy and you can't just go and reinstate it easily. So anyone who takes time out of the workforce, definitely make sure you opt in to those insurance policies and just be aware that, you know, no one reads their super statements that they get via the mail. No one even opens them. They just look at Australian Super or HESTA or whatever and chuck it in the bin. One of those letters may be to opt into the insurance policies. So that's the most important thing.
And can I have a life insurance policy with insurance one and have an income protection policy with insurance two? Nothing's stopping me from doing that, I suppose.
No, there's no issues at all having multiple insurance contracts with different providers. The only thing is just at claim time. So a lot of income protection policies will have a death claim amount, and you don't really want to go like... getting a death certificate and making an insurance claim is not the most fun thing to do. So you don't want to go through that process with two individual insurers.
But I can basically get multiple life insurance policies across multiple insurance companies, let's say $500,000 in one and $500,000 in the other and $500,000 in the other. And if I die, then my beneficiaries claim 500, 500, 500, 1.5 million.
Yeah, exactly. The only limitation is some insurers may not offer, like, let's exaggerate it and say I do $5 million. Some insurance companies will say, actually, we're not comfortable with you having a total of $15 million worth of cover, so they wouldn't have offered that cover. But yeah, basically, no one's getting that set up. So yeah, you can just go $500,000, $500,000, $500,000, and you claim on all of them.
Right. Okay. And is there a health check every 5 years or anything like that? Like, do they come and sort of see if you're healthy enough?
Yeah, this is the beautiful thing about insurance, personal insurance, is it's actually legislated very different to like a car insurance contract. So under car insurance or home and contents, the general insurance contracts, they're renewable every 12 months and the insurance provider has the option to cancel that contract, because it's renewed every 12 months. So they can just opt out and say, hey, we're no longer offering this policy. Under the Life Insurance Act, it's much more heavily regulated and the insurer can't just cancel your policy on you. And under the Life Insurance Act, they can't actually require anything of you after the policy is set up. So that's why they can be really strict up front with regards to exclusions or loadings, because once they're on the hook today, as long as you keep paying your premiums, doesn't matter what happens from a health point of view in the future, you're covered. So your doctor friend that you mentioned, if they had trauma insurance, they would have been paid out. If they have life insurance, doesn't matter about that that health event, they'll still get paid out in the future if they pass away from another heart attack.
Yeah. Does he then have to go back and disclose to the insurance company that he's had a stent put in, and therefore would that affect his life insurance premium? Because he's more likely to, you know, more likely to pass away as a result of a heart problem, right?
Yeah, again, the beautiful thing about life insurance, they can't impact the premiums based on a previous claim. So if you claimed on income protection, they can't then say, well, now you're off claim, we're actually going to jack up your premiums like they can do with car insurance.
So what about, you know, I was talking to a high-income earner, you know, orthopedic surgeon. Shout out to orthopedic surgeons. Thanks for listening in. I know you guys make a lot of money. And you work very hard as well, by the way. If you've ever done orthopedic training or any surgical training, it's years and years and years of quote-unquote abuse. Can you just get, like, orthopedic surgeon makes $2 or $3 million a year, whatever it is, can he or she then go and say, I want a $10 million life insurance because that's what my life's worth? Is there a cap, like what there was for income protection?
Yeah, so for life insurance, there's no cap. You do need to justify the level of cover that you're applying for. So that's why going through an advisor, they'll understand and help you kind of articulate that you may want a $50 million life insurance policy, but the insurance company are not comfortable offering you that cover because, as I said, they're on the hook forever. So they may say, actually, you may want $50 million, but we're only going to give you $7 or $15 or whatever the number. So you've got to financially justify the level of cover when setting up policies.
Sure. And I guess similar to IP cover, you got the stepped and level premiums and you got the inflation adjusted versus non-inflation adjusted. That all's the same sort of principles?
Exactly. And with life insurance, like income protection, ideally, your income's always going to increase. So you want to make sure it's keeping up with inflation. For life insurance, it's kind of one of the, as you're young, you've got a high need. If you've got young kids, high debt, your need is really high and it may increase over the next few years with inflation. But then over time, it starts to taper off. That's when you start to bring it down. So you may turn inflation adjustments on the policy at the start and then just turn it off, you know, in the future. And then when you start to really bring the levels of cover down.
Yeah, mine's one of those things where it just keeps going up and up and up. And it's something that I'm considering, you know, reviewing because, you know, my net worth is getting higher and I make more money now than ever before. So do I really need multiple millions of dollars in life insurance? I don't know, something that I'm reviewing at the moment. Now, terminal illness. So the minute you get diagnosed with a terminal illness, while you're alive, you can actually put in the claim, yeah?
Yeah, and you know, I had a really close friend at the start of the year. I mean, he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer last year, and then he got told he's got weeks to live. And so that's when we put in the terminal illness claim for him. And, you know, similar to with your experience with your friend, having a bit of peace, it was really important for my friend to have the money in the bank. He knew he'd worked in the insurance industry. He knew it would be paid. There was never a question whether it will or won't, but it was like, I want it in the bank account. I want the mortgage cleared while I'm still around. So yeah, a lot of policies will have like a terminal illness. If you're not likely to live more than 12 months, then they will prepay that life insurance.
Very sorry to hear that, but it's an amazing thing, an amazing gift that you can give your loved ones in the event of a very, very terrible, terrible diagnosis. Now, just broadly speaking, claims processes, you know, let's say if someone's got an insurance and that can be life, income protection, et cetera, and they've directly dealt with the insurance company, but when it comes to actually claiming that, can they come to you as an expert and say, look, I don't want to deal with the insurance company, I've got other stuff to do. Can you then help them claim that, or do you only help people that have gone through you right from the start?
Yeah, I mean, our business, we only help people who we've set up the policy or who we're managing the policy for, and that's kind of a part of our value, you know, exchange. If someone's gone direct and then comes to us and asks for help, there are some advisors who may do it on a fee-for-service basis. Our business, we would probably recommend they work with a claims specialist because there are actual businesses set up to help people just purely manage their insurance claims. I would probably say, well, we're maybe not the experts in claiming, but let me put you in the hands of people who are experts in claiming, and it's better than going to a lawyer who will charge a 40% of the claimable benefit. And there's pros and cons, and I'm not going to throw all lawyers under the bus, but you know, managing like claims, going to a claims expert is actually a really good option. But for our clients, yeah, we help them with their claims.
Yeah, that's really useful because, you know, I mean, I've had to fill out insurance forms for patients, particularly for income protection, trauma, and I've done a few life. And it's an incredibly stressful process for the family or the loved ones, the beneficiaries who are having to deal with grief and they have to do all this, you know, in my opinion, a lot of paperwork. And a note to a lot of doctors, what you write in your medical notes is really important. So if you document, you got to document accurately and properly because it has real world implications for patients who want to make claims. I mean, Phil, would you agree? You would be helping the claims process and liaising with doctors and specialists. How's that experience been for you? Is it been rather pleasant or is it like a pain in the ass trying to get all these documents through?
I mean, look, doctors are busy. Like everyone listening is going, yeah, I don't want to fill in these bloody paperwork because I'm busy. And so, you know, there's always this push and pull respecting, you know, the people in their, you know, professional life. They don't want to sit here and filling out this form, but working with the client or working with the doctors to go, well, realizing how important this is. And so if, you know, in our business, we've had very clear cut claims. So cancer diagnosis, we know is almost nothing the doctor can write down on that piece of paper that's going to negatively impact this claim because they're diagnosed. We've got the reports. It's more when there's very like nuanced kind of, you know, claims experiences. And that's not for us to go to the doctor and say, hey, write this. Of course, that's, you know, doctors will never write anything that's not true and whatever. But it's more going, you know, either with the client or providing the client the details to say, this is what your contract states. And when it comes to trauma, it's very technical in terms of, you know, are you this, this, and this? And if it is or isn't, and just helping the medical practitioner understand that what are the terms of this contract so they can just very clearly identify if it meets the terms or doesn't meet the term. Not so they can say it does even if it doesn't. It's just more so that you could make the process smoother. This is what the insurance company needs to understand to meet the definition of a trauma claim. If that is true, just very clearly and specifically write that that is true, and the client's not going to come back to you and get another form filled out, because there's nothing worse for the doctor's point of view than having to fill out more forms again.
Right, no worries. And what about my time? So if a patient comes to me, and this is actually a very common issue that a lot of doctors face, the patient kind of, you know, might say, can you fill out this paperwork, or we get a faxed paperwork from the insurance company. I'm assuming I then send an invoice to the patient or the insurance company. Who pays for my time when I have to do this paperwork? How does that work?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's two stages that the doctors come into to the insurance landscape. On application, there is lots of medical reports that need to be, you know, completed up front. The insurance company will pay for your time when it comes to those initial applications. On claim, to be perfectly honest, I'm not 100% sure. I know when we've helped our clients, it's just been a part of their appointments, but there hasn't been like an extra payment that I'm aware of. Now, sometimes if the insurer needs additional information, they actually go through like third party organizations, and that's when there may be an additional payment that's paid out. But the claims we've helped our clients with are very kind of straightforward and easy. In terms of like life insurance or trauma claims, like trauma, you know, cancer diagnosis. And so they've been done within those appointments.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So one of the things that I think non-healthcare workers might not know is if it's not directly related to a particular consult, then the doctor's not able to bill Medicare or anything like that. So, you know, things like VCE, medical certificates not directly related, or Vic Roads. Vic Roads often send out reports that they need for patients and insurance reports as well. The doctor legally should not be billing Medicare, for example. So, you know, sometimes what they do is they just ask the patient to pay privately and they can't claim a rebate, or they send an invoice to the insurance company directly. So that's the legality of it. Going back to TPD, that's the other insurance that I want to sort of pick your brain on. Sounds like life insurance is a pretty straightforward, there's no sort of, you know, catches there. TPD is interesting. It's an insurance that doesn't get talked about very much. Probably, is it true that it's not really claimed as much than perhaps life insurance or IP or trauma? Where does that fit in?
Yeah, it's the least claimed on, for sure, out of all of them. So TPD, just to fill the listeners in, it's total permanent disablement. So if you can never return to work again, there's a lump sum payment that gets paid out. Now, for most, if you go through a financial advisor, you can get income protection alongside your TPD. Now, some super funds, as soon as you're eligible for TPD, your income protection will cease, even if you've got a long benefit period. So just, again, read the T's and C's and get advice and understand what policies you have. But that's very unlikely to happen. Can you never return to work again? Now, TPD, there's kind of two different forms of TPD. One of them is any occupation, total permanent disability, and the other one is own occupation, total permanent disability. And so coming back to, we talked about this in the last episode with income protection, but that's, can you do your own occupation at the time of claim? So if you set up the policy on an own occupation and you're a junior doctor going through your training, and then 15 years later, you claim and you're a surgeon, then you will be paid out and claimed based on, can you be a surgeon? And so, you know, we can imagine that it's probably easier to get paid a claim if you injure yourself or you hurt your arms. You'll get paid out on that own occupation much easier. Any occupation is based on, can you do any occupation the insurance company can reasonably expect you to do based on previous training, based on your experience? And so it is harder to get paid out a claim for that. So especially if you're a doctor, it is super important, or a specialist in the medical field, it is kind of really important to have that own occupation, because then you can't then revert to, you know, a more junior position and you lose $500,000 worth of income.
What about nursing staff, right? Because they have a lot of subspecialties. If I'm an ICU nurse, You know, I've done extra training to, you know, look after very, very sick people. I suspect it's a very similar sort of thing. I mean, they would go and get TPD and say, my own occupation is an intensive care unit nurse.
Yeah, exactly. And nurse is a great example, because just how physical it is and how much of a wear and tear on your body it is important. And it costs more. So that's the other thing. You know, we haven't talked about premiums too much, but there's always a values judgment. Is this important to you, or do you want to save money on that area? So own occupation TPD is basically, one third more expensive.
Okay. And in terms of other, levers that you can pull, stepped level, inflation adjusted, that all stays the same. You have those levers to pull based on what premiums you can afford?
Exactly. Yeah. So the levels of cover, you can bring that down. You can move to stepped if it's too expensive when you're setting up the policy.
Right. Now, what is the definition of total and permanent disability? Is there an overarching standard definition, or does each insurance company have its own definition of it?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's pretty standardized what it means. I should have probably pulled a PDS so I can give you verbatim exactly what it is. But basically, you need, generally speaking, you need two doctors to sign off saying you can never return to work again. And so it's that hurdle to jump over to say you can never return to work again, for some circumstances, can be really difficult. So think about claims for mental health, which actually makes up a big portion of TPD claims. Are two doctors going to sign off saying you can never return to work again based on your mental health? Well, we've got to project forward a long way in the future to kind of say yes or no. So it is really difficult to get to make a claim on that. Again, if you're a surgeon, you get hit by a bus and you're in a wheelchair for the rest of your life, well, it's easy. You get two of your mates to sign off really easily and quickly.
Yeah, that's interesting, yes, because health is very fluid, isn't it? I mean, I sort of think about my job as to make people better. So if someone came up to me and said, sign me off that I can't work for the rest of my life, that's a very confronting question, because my job is to make them feel better. I want them to go back to work. I want them to have a normal life. But it's that sort of conflict that I've often struggled with. Trauma. It's often called different names. I think it's called critical illness insurance by some insurers. It's called trauma. Is there any other names that we should be aware of that it's called?
I should know. Living benefit.
Right.
So my insurer, which is BT, they call it living benefit. I don't know why we can't just call it the same thing. We just, exactly the same policy. We just, insurance companies love to be fancy and call it something different for some reason.
And the terminology trauma is also very misleading, because for the average healthcare worker, trauma means motor vehicle accident or getting hit by something or fall down, but it actually covers a range of illnesses. Mine covers like 50 different diagnoses. Is 50 the same for across all insurance, or does insurance company one has 45 defined sort of definitions and diagnoses? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, they all roughly cover the same things. Like there are some, like, you can get a partial payment as well if you go for like the comprehensive contract or the plus contract. And so like insurers will differ on really minor things. Like, you can get a partial payment for melanoma. One insurance contract may say your melanoma needs to be a 1.5 mil diameter. And another one may say it needs to be a 1 mil diameter to get a partial claim. So really much of a muchness between them. We almost never make a product recommendation based on the terms and conditions and definitions of the policy, because I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know exactly what you're going to claim on to know, should I go for that melanoma, 1 mil. There's so many other factors when it comes to the insurance contract, but basically broadly they're all very, very similar.
And does it have a own occupation, any occupation clause in trauma, or is it just trauma?
No, so trauma doesn't have any requirement to work or not work. So it doesn't matter what your job is. It's very much a condition-based. So it's quite critical illness is probably a better term for it, because it's cancer, it's heart attack, it's MS, assuming a specific severity. It's Parkinson's, again, under a specific severity. So there are lots of certain things, but it doesn't, I don't know if your friend, when they had that heart attack, if they went to back to work pretty soon, but that could happen and you'd still get a trauma payment. Doesn't matter whether you're working or not.
Yeah. So the seriousness of the illness doesn't really matter. So if you've had a heart attack and it was a, minor heart attack, but it's still a heart attack, then that would be covered under the definition of a heart attack.
No, so the seriousness of the condition does matter very much. So, like, again, I could pull out a PDS and go into, because you'd probably love hearing about what are the actual terms of it. But what, do you want me to do that?
No, no, that's right. I was just curious. No, okay. I didn't realize the seriousness. I didn't realize it's probably good for listeners to maybe do a PDS check on it, but it's probably beyond the scope. But it's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, when I diagnose a heart attack, the level of heart attack is different, right? You've got a trop rise, you know, X amount. You've got a ECG changes, ST elevation. That's a different type of heart attack. So it's interesting that I actually didn't know that. And also you did mention that it's not as if you can't go back to work. So if you had a bit of a heart attack and you get cured and go back to work, you just get paid a lump sum. Just in terms of taxation, just to clarify, income protection we said was tax deductible. Therefore, any claims that they pay you, I'm assuming you got to pay tax on that.
Within a super fund, you do get that 15% tax deduction. If you pay that life insurance outside of super, you don't get the tax deduction. So that's like what with when I said about my cover and the way I've structured it. I've structured my life and TPD, any occupation TPD, inside of super because the super fund will claim that 15% tax deduction. But if I held it outside, I'd need to pay it all through post-tax money and not get any tax deduction for it.
Right. But if I get... If my beneficiaries claim the life insurance, they get paid $2 million or $3 million, I'm assuming they don't have to pay tax on that claim. That's if I'm insured for $2 million.
Yeah, for life insurance, if it goes to a financial dependent, yeah, they get the $2 million for life insurance. TBD, a bit complicated. It depends on, you know, you can, the money will go into a super fund environment and you can pull it out, but there will be a tax associated with pulling that money out. So that's why it's really important to understand how that all works. But you can set it up so you've got like a pension paying because you're not no longer working. You can get a pension and it can be really tax effective. Super complex. Definitely get advice if you ever have a TPD claim.
Yeah. And what about trauma insurance? So if you get a payout, you know, $500,000, whatever, does the person have to pay tax on the $500,000?
Yeah, so the premiums are not deductible and so the benefit is not taxable. So you get the $500,000 in your bank account.
Yeah. And just briefly explain to us about the claims process. And then we'll go to a quick break and then we'll come back and I've got a few special questions. But the claims process, I mean, let's say I go through you and I have all my policies set up. How long does it take on average to claim on these insurances, given that there's waiting periods, particularly for income protection, for example?
Yeah, income protection, you'd always need to wait that waiting period. Well, always with an asterisk. Sometimes there is like a trauma benefit within the old policies where you just automatically get 6 months and you don't need to wait out that waiting period if you have a trauma event. But claims, one of the good things, the APRA statistics that I mentioned on Money Smart, they actually talk about average claims wait times. So, sorry, acceptance wait times. So when does a claim get accepted? And so they show that between financial advisors, direct, and I don't think they showed the direct, but with the super fund. So average claim for income protection is, you know, 2 months for super funds and a little bit less through a financial advisor. But yeah, so there is a bit of a difference when you're claiming through the super fund, only because you've actually got to go through like two entities to make a claim. So when I helped my friend with a terminal illness claim, the insurance company accepted the claim, paid it to the super trustee, and then we needed to get it out of the super environment and paid to the client or my friend. So yeah, generally, I mean, it's all publicly listed, the claims acceptance rates and timing, but you know, 2 months for life insurance, much shorter as well.
Okay. That's actually much better than I thought. And can I just clarify, is it from the time of illness or death, or is it from the time of the claim that's been submitted?
The claim being submitted, yeah.
Okay. So when you have a 1 month waiting policy on an IP, you know, realistically, it's probably going to be a little bit longer than 1 month because you're not going to be putting in the claims on day zero, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can make a claim even before you waited the waiting period, and then they've got to make sure you do last longer, but they can accept it even if they're not going to pay you. But again, yeah, normally with our clients, with that, we go, well, we've got to wait that 30 days anyway. If you're kind of on the fence whether you go back to work or not, then let's just wait and determine if there is an actual loss there that the insurance company will pay. But if you're not going to return to work for 6 months, or, you know, a friend with pancreatic cancer, we knew he wasn't returning to work. So we just submitted the claim straight away and because, you know, the insurance company knew he wasn't returning to work soon.
Now, we'll just take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up this part two. I've got some very special questions. We'll bring another 10 minutes and then we'll finish up. Be right back.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right, welcome back. We're with insurance advisor expert Phil Thompson from Sky Wealth. This is part two. If you haven't listened to part one, go back and listen to it. Dedicated income protection episode, that one. In this episode, we've really been talking about life, trauma and TPD. Now, I got some special questions. Going back to IP again, what if I have $500,000 sitting in the bank account and my waiting period is 30 days? Can the insurance company say, oh, Dev, you've got $500,000. We're not going to pay you in 30 days. That should last you for the next 12 months. Can they say that?
No, they can't. They won't decline a claim or reduce a payment based on any assets you have, but they can offset based on any income you're producing. Normally, I mean, let's go a bit deep. And again, there's hundreds of different contracts. So everything I say, basically go and read your PDFs, first of all. But most of the time, any personal exertion income will be offset. But if you've got investment income of $100,000, that won't be offset against your income protection claim.
So just to clarify, when you say won't be offset, they won't include that as part of my income?
So they won't include it as part of your income to claim on, but they won't reduce your income protection payments at claim time because of that investment income.
So that's an advantage.
Correct.
Yeah. So this is why Dev says pay yourself first and invest. So it means that income that you generate out of non-personal exertion, you can still draw on the investment income while still claiming income protection. What about specific body parts, right? I'm a transplant surgeon. My hands are really important. My eyesight's really important. Can I insure specific body parts? We've heard about it in the media through celebrities, for example. But if I fractured my hand and I'm a neurosurgeon, that has real implications for me to be able to have dexterity when I go back and operate on the brain.
Mm. And basically, that's a general insurance product. So you could go to an insurance company because general insurance, they can renew every 12 months. So they can decide 3 years I'll cover you and the rest I won't. But that would be an income protection claim. If you can't see, you're on income protection. You're probably on TPD as well. And so that's kind of captured in those current today personal insurance products. If you want to specifically get like a $5 million policy just for your fingers, let's call it something ridiculous, then you wouldn't go through a life insurance provider. You'd need to go through a general insurance product. So, you know, most times that would be available if you're uninsurable. So like a sports person may do it because they're uninsurable under a life insurance contract. So they may have it, but it's very, very rare in Australia.
That was just a question that I got from actually one of the surgeons who happens to be a neurosurgeon. Now, legal avenues. Let's say you put in a claim and the insurance company says, no, we're not paying you. And let's say you're the advocate for the patient and you've tried everything and it just hasn't worked and come back to me, Dev, now they've just rejected this claim. Can I pursue legal avenues to try and get my claim?
Yeah, and you can go through the regulator, the finance regulator, APRA. Oh, sorry, not APRA, AFCA. There's so many acronyms, it's ridiculous. So we've got ASIC, APRA, AFCA. So you can go through the AFCA to make a complaint, a formal complaint. But there is very much an internal complaints process with every insurance and every, you know, financial services license in Australia. There's always going to be some complaints mechanism. So if you haven't gone through the insurer directly to make a formal complaint, then AFCA would probably direct you to do that first and then take on that case. And then if it really doesn't work, you can get legal representative. It's very few and far between that this does happen. But coming back to those claims experts, that's where we'd engage those claims experts to go, based on your experience, is this unfair? Is this not, you know, reasonable? And most of it's just around due process. Has the insurer done due process around it? Because back in the dirty old days, insurance companies would do like surveillance. Prove that you actually can't work. And because if you're walking around but you're meant to be in a wheelchair, then they could decline a claim because of that. Today, insurance companies all signed up for a code of practice and they're not allowed to do those type of things anymore.
Yeah, it sounds like A Current Affair or Today Tonight, where they have the private investigator. Now, as a doctor...
Yeah, they're not allowed to do any of that these days.
As a doctor, should I be... ever been in a situation where an insurance company will say, we need more information, we want you to interview you, specifically, Dev, about your patient? Has that ever happened? And is that something that doctors or healthcare workers should be aware of?
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, and again, same. It's very similar process setting up a policy and making a claim. The underwriter just wants to understand what's going on. And my experience with insurance companies, you know, and coming back to the claim stats, 95, 97% claims acceptance rates, insurance companies are in the business of paying out claims. Like, they're not in here to catch people out. So sometimes it's just quicker and easier to pick up the phone and just go, hey, I've got a few questions. So these days on application, which we do a lot of, they're doing telehealth appointments. The insurance companies doing a lot more telehealth appointments with a GP because they've just got very specific questions about conditions or symptoms for mental health. And they just want to understand this. They don't need to fax you a report for you to fill out, you know, War and Peace. Very simple. So they do telehealth. Same on the claim site. They may just go, hey, I just want to get a really basic understanding, very specific question. And so they're doing that more and more these days.
And on the flip side, I'm assuming the insurance companies have their own medical practitioners and their own professionals on their books that they contract out. So presumably they're reviewing all the information to corroborate. So you do on the other side. Now, the other question I had was sick leave, right? As a healthcare professional, if I'm privately practicing, I have no sick leave, no annual leave, no super. I got to do it all by myself. But I work in the public hospital. I get entitlements, long service leave, sick leave, etc. Can income protection, if I have a 30-day, again, going back to the 30-day rule, waiting period, can they say, oh, Dev, you've actually got 2 years worth of sick leave and that's going to be paid out because obviously I'm going to be sick. Therefore, you're going to have to run out of the sick leave before we actually pay you out the income protection. Is that a risk?
It is a risk, yeah. Based on, you know, what you've told me about your contracts being the older ones, that wasn't the case with the older contracts. And this is, again, where APRA came in and said, these are too generous. Let's just chill out on these benefits you're giving the policyholder. And so it's kind of lent towards making it more restrictive. And that's one of the things that did come in is there are sick leave offsets. So, yeah, you may have a 30-day waiting period, but you got 90 days of sick leave. Well, we won't pay you until that sick leave is exhausted. But the old contracts, you know, if you used your sick leave, then you couldn't double dip. But you weren't required to use your sick leave. So again, super important, especially these days, insurance is even more complex than it ever has been with the old contracts and the new contracts. Definitely important to reach out to an advisor just to understand what you've got, what the contract says, especially if you're ever going to move it. It's really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I actually didn't know that you had the option with the old contracts to not use sick leave potentially, so you've got to ask that specifically. Sounds like that benefit or that sort of privilege has expired. It looks like you'll be forced to use sick leave. Is that right? You'll be forced to use sick leave, and then when you run out, and then you've got to, you know, potentially that's when they'll pay out.
Again, not all of them. Some of them came in with those requirements. Again, there's so many factors when it comes into which insurance product is best suited. You know, for someone who has a massive amount of sick leave, then we kind of go, well, these products are a hard no. Or, hey, do we have a 2-year waiting period anyway? Because we're going to have that sick leave. And then you can automatically reduce it down to 90 days under certain conditions with these contracts. So it's really important when setting it up that all, and we ask a million questions when we set up policies. So this is why we, because there are heaps of things to consider: your health history, your sick leave entitlements, your income, your future plans, all of that goes into recommending the right insurance contract. It's not just give me the cheapest price, because that's very rarely kind of going to be the most appropriate.
No worries. Well, that's it. That's all the questions. Fair bit of in-depth analysis. We went everything from income protection, general questions about TV, insurance, ads, life insurance, trauma, TPD. So, Phil, really appreciate you taking the time and giving us a couple of hours out of your day to have a chat about insurance. So thank you very much.
No worries. Thanks heaps for having me. And if anyone's made it this far, well done. You've done a great job.
No worries. So a couple of shout-outs. Phil did mention about Maths Geeks. I'm sure this listener is listening in. Dr. Chang, who's a huge math fanatic. So really appreciate him listening in. He would love the job of an actuary, to be honest. He's actually an anaesthetist. I won't tell you exactly where he works. So shout out to them. And also shout out to Dr. FT, who's personally shared his story about his heart attack story. And of course, Phil Thompson, your dear friend who recently passed away. So my condolences to you. And it's really, really important. I cannot stress this enough for doctors, nurses, healthcare workers, any profession. If you're driving a car and your car is insured and your life, your illness, your health is not insured, that is a huge, huge risk. So once again, thank you very much, Phil.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's all we have time for in part two with an interview with an insurance expert with Phil Thompson from Sky Wealth. Details in the show notes. Feel free to email him for any questions. And if you want a quote, etc., I'm sure Phil will help you out. Now, remember to leave a 5-star rating and review on the Apple Podcast or whatever platform you may be using. Make sure you use it on all of the platforms and leave a 5-star review on all of the platforms. That's even better. And remember, until next time, my name's Dev Rugger and this is Dev Rugger Personal Finance. And please make sure you stay safe.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. SIMO Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.